Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, it's the bleakest time of the year, with January and everything else that's going on. And we could all do with some uplifting movies to get stuck into as we hide ourselves away at home. Now, Mike Sheridan of the Delve podcast joins me now on the programme to suggest some morale-boosting movies that'll cheer you up over the next couple of weeks. Mike, thanks a million for joining us and you're very welcome back to the programme. How's it going?
Not too bad, Cormac. Thanks a lot for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Like, first of all, before we get into this, what are the ingredients of an uplifting movie, do you think?
Well, I think it depends what you're into, really, doesn't it? I mean, for me, I found John Wick really uplifting because, you know, we get this revenge and it's Keanu Reeves been awesome. It really depends what you're into. But for something like this kind of list, for something that kind of resonates with people, I think it's human connection within the movie. It's triumph over adversity. It's the characters feel real. They go on a journey. They come out the other side. All of that good stuff.
All right, so look, we've got some absolute crackers on a list here, so let's try and get through as many of them as we can and kick off with The Shawshank Redemption. The clue is in the name, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, The Shawshank is regularly referenced as one of the best movies ever made. One is, you know, it's on every single list. It's on the top 10 at least in every single list. But when it came out, it was a bomb. And it just, and a lot of the time, I think with those types of movies, at least back then in the world before social media, that kind of came down to marketing. The reviews were okay. It was written and directed by Frank Darabont, adapted from a Stephen King novel. You know, one of those novels that Stephen King wrote that wasn't necessarily in the horror vein, but starring Tim Robbins as Andy Dufresne, Morgan Freeman as Red, the character Red. Just this incredible uplifting story of somebody who sent to prison for something that he didn't do, spends the guts of, I think, 20 years in prison, you know, shouts about his innocence, says he's innocent, but everybody in Shawshank says they're innocent and goes through this horrific time in prison, but then comes out the other side and I think, anyway, one of the most uplifting finales in cinema history.
Just before I get into a clip there, why wasn't it successful? Or what happened that everyone suddenly knows The Shawshank Redemption now?
It just took its time. I think what happened, I think a lot of really great movies, that's happened a lot throughout history. The word of mouth is what makes the movies great. And like when they come out, they don't necessarily take off, or they're not necessarily box office hits. And it also depends on how you define a successful movie. So a movie can win Oscars and lose money. A movie can, you know, make $1 billion, $2 billion and not be particularly well reviewed. This is just a film that's resonated for a long time and kind of cemented itself in cinematic history.
Probably for the reasons of it's so fantastic. Anyway, look, I digress. Let's take a clip from The Shawshank Redemption and see if this makes you feel a bit better about yourself today.
And that's how it came to pass that on the second to last day of the job, the convict crew that tarred the plate factory roof in the spring of 49 wound up sitting in a row at 10 o'clock in the morning, drinking icy cold Bohemia-style beer, courtesy of the hardest screw that ever walked a turn at Shawshank State Prison.
Drink up while it's cold, ladies.
The colossal prick even managed to sound magnanimous.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like, I mean, even Morgan Freeman's voice makes me feel like, you know what, everything is going to be okay, isn't it?
Yeah, and the character in the book is actually Irish. It's a redheaded Irish guy. So Frank Darabont, who wrote and directed it, it's just wonderful casting there because there's such a leaning on the voiceover, and Morgan Freeman has, you know, probably the most iconic voice in cinema. So, and that's a beautiful scene as well, where they get this kind of respite from, you know, the horrificness of Shawshank, and they get to have a beer in the sun.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. Okay, let's move on to Rocky Balboa. Tell us about that. Why we need to be uplifted by that particular film?
Well, Rocky Balboa, I think, was the sixth franchise at this stage, and Sylvester Stallone's career wasn't particularly in a good place. I mean, he's made some huge movies over the years. His movies have made a lot of money. The older he was getting, the less he was being thought of for kind of bigger roles after Copland. So he wrote and directed, I think, what he assumed at the time. I probably didn't think it was going to be as successful as it was, this installment in the Rocky franchise, where Rocky's not necessarily down on his luck, but he has kind of issues in his life. He doesn't have a great relationship with his son. He's kind of living off a restaurant. He's living off his reputation. And I think Rocky
so. This
Balboa
is the film,
has...
Mike, where he Rocky is older. He's the older, like, you know, his glories are behind him in the late 70s. Yeah. This is when he's kind of washed up.
Yeah, yeah, he's probably suffering from a little bit of CTE, I'd say. And, you know, he's getting flashbacks to that Ivan Drago fight that we saw in Rocky 4 too. It probably has for me anyway. It's one of those monologues that Sylvester Stallone gives as Rocky Balboa. And he wrote it too, kind of about picking yourself up and life hits you and get back up. It's just this really brilliantly delivered monologue. Okay. I mean, it's not particular. You wouldn't call it like a great movie. It definitely has problems, but just the pure air punch and joy. And
all right, listen. Let's have a listen to it here.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Good God. Oh, man. I was recoiling back from the speakers there. That is impassioned stuff. And, like, you can, the situation that we're all involved in the world now with the pandemic, everything you can listen through the prism of these clips, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And, like, that clip in particular is one of those. It just turns up on all these motivational videos and stuff on YouTube about training, about working out, about, you know, he says it in the clip, life gets you down, you kind of have to pick yourself back up. And in the movie as well, there is, you're kind of waiting on it to happen for the whole movie, because the movie's based around Rocky taking a fight against the current champion. There's a training montage, and there's a whole, like, your knees are shot, you don't have any speed, you know, his old coach is giving him this motivational talk, and that Rocky music kicks in for that montage. And for about 90 seconds to 2 minutes, you're kind of taken back to it again.
And so, the hairs on the back of your neck.
Yeah, really, really. And I mean, Rocky Balboa as well, we have to remember, led to the Creed movies as well, which has taken the franchise in a whole new, the first one at least, a whole new brilliant direction.
Anyway, back to the uplifting nature of films. Good Will Hunting, what's the story there?
Good Will Hunting, so, I mean, Robin Williams won an Oscar for Good Will Hunting, and deservedly so. He is absolutely superb. But it was a movie that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were trying to get made for a long, long time. Two guys in their, like, mids, early 20s weren't getting the work that they thought they would get in Hollywood, and finally got this movie off the ground, won an Oscar for the screenplay, and it's based on Matt Damon's character in a working-class area of Boston who's had a really, really rough childhood and might just be a genius when one of the teachers, one of the professors in Harvard, you know, sees that this guy's a genius from writing on a whiteboard. He basically kind of does some investigations, figures out it's him. He pairs him with a psychiatrist, with Robin Williams' character, another professor, and this relationship just blooms.
Okay, let's have a quick blast of that.
Every day I come by your house and I pick you up. We go out, we have a few drinks and a few laughs, and it's great. You know what the best part of my day is? For about 10 seconds from when I pull up to the curb and when I get to your door. Because I think maybe I'll get up there and I'll knock on the door and you won't be there. No goodbye, no see you later, no nothing. Just left. I don't know much, but I know that.
Fantastic stuff. Look, anyone listening out there to this as well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on what movies cheer you up, would boost your morale, maybe get you moving. 51552, let us know about that one, because those ones, we might be missing out on some vital films. Mike, Rudy, what's the story with that? I'm not familiar with this film.
See, this is it. See, Rudy's a really funny one, because Rudy is one of those movies that's, and stories really, that's referenced constantly in popular culture and, like, American television and American movies. So Rudy's based on a true story, and it's basically this guy who wanted to play for Notre Dame, took forever to get into Notre Dame, ultimately this character Rudy, and then decided he wanted to play for the football team, the American football team in Notre Dame, who are obviously at a really high level. It's not great because he's 5'6" and he's played by Sean Austin in the movie, but ultimately he gets a chance to play for Notre Dame despite being, you know, not really built for the sport. He basically gets one play towards the end of the movie, and the whole kind of wholesomeness and good times that, you know, the vibes that come from this are really from the team and everybody around the team that basically stand up for Rudy and push him to get that chance to just put on that Notre Dame jersey and to get out onto the football field.
And tell us about, I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick clip of that before we move on.
Sorry I never got you to see your first game in here.
Hell, I've seen too many games in this stadium.
I thought you said you never saw a game.
I've never seen a game from the stands.
You were a player?
I rode the bench for 2 years. Thought I wasn't being played because of my color. I got filled up with a lot of attitude. So I quit. Still not a week goes by, I don't regret it. And I guarantee a week won't go by in your life. You won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you. You hear me clear enough?
Fantastic stuff there. Look, Mike, tell us about Little Miss Sunshine. It's a film that I've seen myself, and it would turn anyone who has a heart of stone, would melt that, wouldn't it? Tell me about Little Miss Sunshine. Tell us what we need to see it.
Yeah, Little Miss Sunshine was this independent movie that came out like a good few years ago now with like Steve Carell, Alan Arkin, Greg Kinnear, Tony Collette, who's just superb in absolutely everything. And it's basically this kind of dysfunctional family on the road, and you get to kind of engage and see these strange characters that kind of reside within, I think, every single family, maybe not to the extremities that you see in this kind of quirky independent movie, but it's relatable on so many levels. These characters, like every family has the kind of certain, you know, the teenager that's going through something else, the kind of dad that's having a midlife crisis, the grandparents that's kind of, you know, resonating and looking back at their lives or whatever it is. But it's just this little movie that could, and again, it kind of parallels real life in that the movie kind of came out of nowhere, and at the year it came out, like a 1-2 Oscars for Best Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor for Alan Arkin, it just took off, and it was just really, really good vibes that just, I think, people really, really responded to.
It's one of my favourite films, probably my top favourite films of all time, like akin to Sideways, which is sort of a similar, everybody's failing at everything all the time, but there's redemption in the end. Let's have a quick listen to a clip from Little Miss Sunshine.
I just wish I could go to sleep till I was 18 and skip all this crap, high school and everything, just skip it.
You know, Marcel Proust, total loser, never had a real job, unrequited love affairs, gay. Spent 20 years writing a book almost no one reads. But he's also probably the greatest writer since Shakespeare. Anyway, he gets down to the end of his life, and he looks back and decides that all those years he suffered, those were the best years of his life, because they made him who he was. All the years he was happy, you know, total waste. Didn't learn a thing. So, if you sleep until you're 18, think of the suffering you're gonna miss.
Steve Carell, that was before I knew who he was in that film. It's absolutely fantastic. And if I can add to your endorsement to this, Mike, that one is definitely one you need to go and see or get your hands on at least. Cool Runnings, Mike. What's happening there?
Cool Runnings, it's another one of these sports movies that's based on, you know, ostensibly kind of sort of based on a true story. The movie came out in 1993, and it's kind of based on the American bobsleigh team. Oh, sorry, the Jamaican bobsleigh team, who took part in the 1988 Olympic Games, being that in Canada, being that, you know, there's not a whole lot of snow in Jamaica, and it's going to be difficult for them to train, basically. Like, for me, this movie is just pure joy from beginning to end. And I think the best rewatchable movies that you see, the movies that you can kind of turn on and, you know, kind of no matter what mood you're in, feel like almost like a warm blanket. They're just comforting. And John Candy is in so many of those movies. His presence alone, he's just got this natural warmth that you just don't see on screen as much anymore. And it's just
sadly,
ultimate feel-good movie. Yeah, and like I watched the making of Home Alone recently on Netflix, and that one day that John Candy does, one day he did filming on it, like they dragged out to like 27 hours to get as much of him as they possibly could in the film. He makes
everything brighter. Quick, tell us a quick clip of Cool Runnings, and then you might come back and tell us the couple of films, the ones that we really do need to listen to lift our spirits. Okay, this is Cool Runnings, by the way.
You want to know why I cheated, right?
Yes, I do.
You see, Therese, I'd made winning my whole life. And when you make winning your whole life, you have to keep on winning, no matter what. You understand that?
No, I don't understand, Coach.
You had 2 gold medals. You had it all. Darice, a gold medal is a wonderful thing. But if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it.
Oh, fantastic stuff. There's a couple of texts in here. Forrest Gump, pull any heartstring, and that's from Gavin. That'll bring you through the ringer. Fried Green Tomatoes, not well known, released in 1991. Kathy Bates plays the main character. Absolutely amazing, underrated movie. Very emotional, but very, very uplifting as well. Now, Mike, we're running out of time, sadly. So give us your top two, not necessarily your top two, 2 more films that will lift our spirits. What are you talking?
Well, I'd say probably Tom Cruise is, I mean, people will talk about Top Gun, they talk about Mission Impossible for Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise's signature role for me, I think the one role that he will really, really be remembered for, at least where his career is right now, is Jerry Maguire, which is just, it's a Cameron Crowe's 2nd movie as a director, just this movie about love and relationships and about a memo that's sent around that ultimately gets Jerry Maguire's character, sports agent, fired, but that ends up like this horrible moment in his life. But that ends up basically being the making of the character.
And I can guarantee you more people know this clip than have seen the film. That's for sure. Let's take a listen to it.
I will stay with you. But this is what you're going to do for me. You listen? Show me the money. Show you the money.
Oh, no, no. You can do better than that, Jerry. I want you to say it, what you would mean it, brother.
Hey, I got Bob Sugar on the other line. I better hear you say it.
Yeah, no. Show you the money.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It is quite the clip there. And finally, Mike, what have you got for us? You gone there, Mike? Well, I think we might have lost Mike. We might have to leave it on Jerry Maguire. I think we have. Are you there, Mike? I think he's gone. Oh, well, never
I'm
mind.
Here.
Oh, you're there. You're hiding in the swamp. Mike, tell us, give us one last film then before we go that will lift our spirits.
So The King's Speech is one that was another Oscar winner from a few years ago with Colin Firth. Colin Firth won an Oscar for that one. And it's based on a true story of King George, who had a kind of debilitating stammer in a lot of ways in the 30s as he became kind of the head of the monarchy in the UK. And the whole film's kind of leading up to this speech that he has to give. Like, wireless radios were just becoming a thing at the time. So it's all kind of leading up to this speech and him trying to overcome the stammer while he has to give this reassuring speech to the British nation at the start of World War II in 1939.
Oh, it's fantastic stuff. Well, listen, Mike, Happy New Year to you. And, you know, get out and get a few of those. I was just about to say DVDs. They're dead, aren't they? Anyway, we'll all be buzzing after getting into some of these. Mike Sheridan from the Delve podcast. Thanks a million for joining us on the programme today.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.